This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, day two and more executive orders from the White House focused on job creation and energy independence. In just a moment, John Hayward with Breitbart joins us with the latest from the Oval Office. And just moments ago, the House passed the no taxpayer funding of abortion bill by Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. It is now up to the Senate. One of the chief authors of the Senate version of the bill, Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker, tells us what is next in the effort to get taxpayers out of the abortion business. That's later here on Washington Watch. Also last night, candidates aspiring to take over as chairman or chairperson or chair something of the Democratic National Committee met to discuss what went wrong in 2016. You'll be shocked at what happened. Then again, maybe not, given how the left has been in total meltdown mode. Bishop Harry Jackson Jr. gives us his thoughts on the Democratic Party's future. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, well, you can catch it later tonight. It's all archived at TonyPerkins.com. Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, yesterday and again today, President Trump has taken pen to paper, and signed a number of executive orders undoing the orders of his predecessor. Now there's a trend, job creation, limiting government regulations, but there's more. Joining us now is John Hayward, a reporter with Breitbart. He's been following the happenings in the Oval Office. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much for having me again.
Really an about-face in the White House on a number of issues. Today was the Keystone Pipeline, taking the opposite approach of the last administration. What else has the president been up to today?
Well, I think the Keystone Pipeline will prove to be very, very significant. But we've also seen executive orders pulling us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was a very big deal. The Mexico City policy is back, which means non-governmental organizations can't receive federal funding if they promote abortion or push abortion in programs overseas. That's a policy that's coming down fairly predictably. Every Republican president reinstates it, and every Democrat cancels it. And now it's back under President Trump, which is important. He canceled a mortgage cut that was scheduled for FHA mortgages, which the people who wanted the cut canceled said was dangerous. They said it jeopardized the financial health of the program, and they weren't certain that it was really a good idea to take that money away. Now, of course, that move is being criticized as being a brutal imposition of additional costs on homebuyers, and it was heartless of President Trump to do it, but I think they thought about that. I think they were genuinely nervous about the fiscal health of the FHA program, and they might bring it back or bring some other kind of an incentive program back for homebuyers, but I think some thought went into doing that. I don't think it was a decision that was reached easily. And then we have the Affordable Care Act, being the individual mandate, being essentially disabled. The IRS was told they can't do anything to collect your fee for not buying Obamacare except put liens on your taxes. They had other methods before now, but they're being prevented from using those methods.
And that's within the realm of the authority of the executive office to do to take such actions?
Oh, yes, all those things are definitely executive branch actions. And I noticed the conversation has shifted quite a bit since Trump began issuing these orders. The people that told us that President Obama should have more executive power and it was obstructionism to oppose him are singing a very different tune now. And they're saying, no, we need to curb executive power. But really, none of these things Trump has done is a push on the envelope of executive power. And I wouldn't say it's really a push against what it was before Obama. These early moves are all things that every sort of president did before. He hasn't really done anything super daring yet.
Yeah, also put a freeze on all federal hiring except the military. So let me ask you this, John. When you look at the priorities of the first 2 days that we see reflected in these executive orders, it looks like he's touching on almost every aspect, you know, to a degree, of the core issues that he campaigned on.
Indeed so, and I think that the Keystone Pipeline is going to be a really big, significant move in that direction. That is the attitudinal game changer to me. No longer is that project going to be stalled pointlessly as a sop to environmentalists. We were being essentially billed, the American people, all of us, by this Keystone Pipeline block in order to make what everyone admitted was an entirely symbolic gesture to the environmental movement because they needed to feel like they had a win And I just don't think we should be billed for things like that. They can pay for their own feel-good measures. And I think this idea of moving forward to things that are good for the American people, prosperous for the economy, no longer making ritual sacrifices to ideology, that's a very major change away from the way President Obama was conducting affairs.
Well, certainly on the Keystone Pipeline, because even Congress weighed in on that and the president decided to go a different direction.
And actually, that was a big factor in the midterms, if you'll recall. I'm surprised how much of the commentary today has forgotten that. But during the midterm elections, a number of endangered Democrats back in 2014 broke away from President Obama and began criticizing him sternly for blocking the Keystone Pipeline. They said he was being foolish and it was time to get things moving. And some of them lost anyway, notably Mary Landrieu in Louisiana. But that was a big issue in the midterm elections. And now here we are one election cycle later and it's happening. It seems to me like the American people have made their voices quite clear on the subject.
I mean, John Hayward, is there almost a sense of whiplash? I mean, such a contrast in ideologies, governing ideologies now coming out of the White House. I mean, you had one that thought everything emanated from government. In fact, everything emanated from basically the Oval Office, to where now you see this decentralized approach that it's really the private sector. It is getting government out of the way and unleashing the power of the private sector to drive and grow our economy.
That's the idea, and while it's early to make sweeping judgments about the big picture, it does seem like the other big difference is that President Obama's executive orders tended to be targeted political gestures towards specific constituencies, like blocking Keystone XL to please the environmental movement, and Trump is more pro-growth so far for the entire country. None of these things feels like a sop to a specific constituency. These are all more general moves designed to turn things around in Washington and move away from centralized planning and central regulation. I hope he keeps that up.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. John Hayward, Breitbart News, is with me discussing the first 2 days on the job, full days on the job by President Trump and the actions he's taking through executive order. John, let's talk just a moment about the Keystone Pipeline, because there's, and of course, it was also the Dakota Access Pipelines. There's been a lot of environmental protest on site surrounding these projects. Is there a sense that Donald Trump, having gone through a very tough campaign, having endured the anger of the left? I mean, we saw it here this weekend in D.C. with the protest on Friday and Saturday. Is he kind of become hardened to that, where he's going to press forward regardless of what the extreme left says?
He seemed a little hardened going in, actually. I think he was always a bit combative about pushing back against things like this. That's part of his style. I think it's interesting.
I think we've got some kind of connection issue there. Let's see if we can get John reestablished. I don't know what happened. Maybe the left didn't like the conversation. I think it's fascinating myself and very telling. So far, what I've seen, we talked about this yesterday with the president's address, inaugural address, staying true to the themes of the campaign. Now you see the executive orders. I think we got John. You're back with us.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. So continue that thought that you were talking about, how the president was kind of hardened going in, and he's holding fast to the things that he campaigned on.
And it's very important to do that, because you can't fold up under pressure like this, especially this early, 2 days into your first 100 days. It's important to send that signal you mean business and you're going to do these things and not be intimidated, and actually take steps that are positive for the country. At the end of the day, if you really believe you're doing the right thing, you should be willing to take some strong criticism and push hard and use some leverage in Congress to get these things done. And then in the course of time, we'll all see how it worked out. And if Trump is right and these pro-growth measures deliver us 4% growth, as I know they're shooting for, maybe even better than that, that would cast a very terrible pall backwards on the Obama years. We were told we had to settle for so much less, and Trump would be proving that, no, we don't.
I think, in part, the left just doesn't get that there's somebody who is actually going to do what they said they were going to do. I mean, that's why you saw the reactions to his inaugural address I was making reference to earlier. That, all he did was basically continue the themes of his campaign, and most people are accustomed to a politician start backing away and dialing back and kind of going to the mushy middle, he seems to continue down a path of clarity on the very things that he campaigned on, which is probably hard for them to fathom that there's such a politician out there to do such a thing.
I thought it was very interesting that his inaugural speech was criticized as being too much like his campaign speech. And I thought, good. I mean, isn't that what we want?
Yeah,
we want the
exactly.
inaugural speech to be like the campaign was. And some people didn't hear the campaign speech. He knows that. So he had another chance to bring those themes out and give them to people. And he did it quite succinctly. It was a short, punchy speech. It was just what you want. In an inaugural address, you can disagree with the content, but I thought it was well delivered. And I think that's the direction the country wants to move in. People are tired of nonsense and symbolism, political correctness. You can call it by many names, but it always boils down to attempts to control discourse and control behavior and intimidate people. Intimidation has been the coin of the realm for these right. past 8 years and well before that, I would say. And that's what I think people wanted a breather from, and Trump seemed to do that.
John, one other aspect on the executive orders today. One dealt with the manufacturing of pipes here in the United States for these pipelines, that they wanted to focus on U.S. manufactured pipes.
Which is, of course, going to be criticized as protectionism. But I noticed that immediately after President Trump began talking about infrastructure spending, the Chinese media began running stories about how they support that and they want to be part of these big joint infrastructure projects. And I think he's wanting to send the message backwards. This is, no, this is going to be American. We're going to do this here, and we're going to do it carefully. We had a $1 trillion infrastructure bill in 2009, and it went nowhere. We didn't get any infrastructure. People were justifiably nervous about putting that much money in the government's hands again, and Trump has to prove that not only will he spend it wisely and get these things built, but that he'll do it in a way that helps American jobs and contractors and manufacturers, as he's promised. That's exactly what he needs to do to fulfill that promise.
So, John, how long do you think we got to wait to see if this is the real deal?
It's traditional to see how a president stands after their first 100 days. That's the term everybody looks for. And then you size them up and see how they're doing. I think that's fair. I think the world moves faster these days, but 100 days is still a good window. It's time to get some bills through Congress. It's time to fight the first big legislative battles and see what everybody's really serious about. And that's enough time to see what the Republicans in Congress make of the new administration. Mm-hmm. That's always a big question. We have to see how they're getting along with all this and whether they're comfortable with the agenda and how they're doing. So I think that's enough time to really see how everybody's settling in and seeing where it's going.
One final question for you, John Hayward. What should we be expecting next out of the White House?
I think that the next couple of things the president does are likely to be more in this pro-growth business. He's going to talk about tax reform. A Supreme Court justice could be right around the corner. There are rumors today he's narrowing the short list and maybe announcing a Supreme Court justice. Of course, everyone's waiting to hear who he picks and how that goes. That's a big fight. So if you're planning to put a Supreme Court justice out there, you want to clear your calendar for a couple of weeks. That's going to be a big deal if he does that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. John Hayward, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights on what's been taking place in the Oval Office the last 2 days.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right, John Hayward, Breitbart News. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. As we mentioned just moments ago, the House passing the No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion bill that now moves to the Senate. Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi is up next. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
The Rapid Response Arm of 8 Days of Hope is responding to tornado victims in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. On January 21st, a tornado severely damaged hundreds of homes and killed 4 people. Will you please volunteer to help Hattiesburg residents? Here's 8 Days of Hope director, Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help with Hattiesburg tornado relief, please visit 8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this ministry effort. To give, please visit 8daysofhope.com and pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this devastating tornado. 8 Days of Hope is a nonprofit Christian ministry.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And I remind you once again that this program is made possible by our listeners. If you'd like to be a part of supporting FRC and the Washington Watch radio program, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, just moments ago, the House, by a vote of 238 to 183, passed H.R. 7. No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion Act. The Senate version was introduced this week. No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, which is Senate Bill 184. Now, the focus now shifts from the House to the Senate. And joining us in just a moment, Senator Roger Wicker. He is a Republican from Mississippi, and he's one of the key authors of the bill. He has served as a senior member of the Armed Services Committee since January 2008, as well as the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. And as of just a few days ago, he was selected to serve as a counsel to the majority leader in the 115th Congress. And he's going to tell us where the bill goes now that the Senate is going to be taking it up. But this is an important measure. What this does, it takes the essentially takes the Hyde Amendment, which goes all the way back to Illinois Congressman Henry Hyde back in the 70s after the Supreme Court imposed abortion on demand on the entire country. For a couple of years, the federal government was funding abortions, elective abortions. And, of course, when the government funds something, guess what happens? It gets more of them. I mean, makes sense. Basic economics, somebody else is paying for it, you're going to get more of it. And so Henry Hyde first tried to pass a constitutional amendment to ban abortion, but then put forth a measure that would say, look, a taxpayer shouldn't be forced to be a party to funding something that they are morally opposed to. So from that point forward, about, I think, 1975, may have been, or 76. From that time forward, every year, it became what's called a rider. It was added to the appropriations bill for Medicaid. And so it every year, and every year since, Congress has added that to that. However, under the administration of Barack Obama, because Obamacare and other forms of health care were funded through a different means, the provisions of the Hyde Amendment did not apply. So what this simply does, No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion Act, it makes the provisions of the Hyde Amendment statutory, meaning it doesn't have to be added every year to appropriations bills. It will become federal law, permanent federal law, until another Congress were to change it. And that would simply say that taxpayer money will not go to fund elective abortions. So it's a step. It's a step in the right direction of building this wall of separation, if you will, between taxpayers and the abortion industry. Now, this is separate. This is separate from the defunding of Planned Parenthood. That's another initiative. We're going to see it coming up shortly in the reconciliation budget bill, which will defund Planned Parenthood. And then you'll see it move forward in a standalone bill as well. All right. We have Senator Roger Wicker now, Mississippi Republican, one of the key authors of the No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion bill in the Senate. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, and this is a good day.
It is. We were just talking about the House has passed the House version of this bill, 238 to 183. Now the focus turns to the Senate. What do the prospects look like for you in the Senate moving this bill forward?
Well, I tell you what, the prospects are greatly improved because we genuinely have a president who is pro-life, and we know if we make the extra effort to pass this bill and it lands on the president's desk, that President Donald Trump will sign this. And so it makes it worth the effort. You know, in the past we knew how easy it would be to pass it in the House, and this is a good vote, 238 to 183, and bipartisan at that. But it was a little discouraging to think that the end result was going to be a veto by Barack Obama. So we are going to approach this issue with renewed enthusiasm, and we're gonna make a real effort. We do need bipartisan support. We'll have most of the Republicans, maybe not all, but we think if people make the case and call their senators, we've got as good a chance as we've had in a long, long time.
I mean, this is pretty straightforward. It simply states that taxpayers will not be forced to fund abortion through their tax dollars. I mean, this is something that the vast majority of Americans believe this. I mean, there was a new Marist poll out. 83% of Americans overwhelmingly support President Trump's move to defund abortion groups with taxpayer money. So, I mean, there's nothing. This shouldn't be hard.
It shouldn't be, and we just hope that the Senate will follow the vast majority of public opinion on this. And my figures had it 2/3, but you may, I guess it depends on how you ask the polling question. But the people are behind this. Even folks who are regrettably pro-choice, a number of them don't believe the taxpayer has any business funding
right.
this.
And exactly.
So, I think the people are behind us, and we're going to work on it. Of course, we had great news yesterday from President Trump with this Mexico City policy, which involves international
right.
organizations that support and participate in coercive and involuntary abortions. So the president is really making a bold statement early on in his administration.
He is.
That
he is
going to support the pro-life movement.
He is moving in the right direction. Senator, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, and we will get you back on as that bill moves forward in the Senate.
Great. Well, thanks for getting the message out there.
All right, will do. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, the left is in full meltdown. We'll talk about it. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
European stocks are moving a little bit higher today. It's very interesting because apparently Britain's top court ruled that the UK government must consult lawmakers before starting the process of exiting the European Union. That was not something that was expected. So it's interesting to me that stocks are moving higher in the UK on that news. We'll have to wait and see, of course, what all of that means, but nonetheless, interesting, after dropping three straight days, we're seeing the European and the UK indexes moving higher. China is pumping an enormous amount of money into the Lunar New Year this year. I think most of this $137 billion that it is spending on this is probably to try to bring a little peace and happiness and joy to its people after struggling for over a year and a half with their economy, their exports, and their industrial production. I think that we can take this as a small little sign that things aren't all coming up roses in the Chinese economy. This on the heels of President Trump pulling out of TPP, the trade pact. China, of course, one of those nations involved in that. They, China, moving forward when trying to cut deals with the rest of those nations. That is going to be interesting to watch, but I will say this. I believe President Trump only has about 60, maybe 120 days to start negotiating new trade pacts with those other countries, or it could be a problem for the U.S. economy.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. Last night, candidates aspiring to take over as chairman, chairperson, chair something of the Democratic National Committee met to discuss what went wrong in 2016. Now, the meeting turned into a hate fest. Now, listen to this. I got a clip for you from last night. This is the executive director of Idaho's Democratic Party, Sally Brown.
I am so excited that we're here, and I am listening, because that's my job. My job is to listen to the issues. My job is to listen and be a voice. And my job is to shut other white people down when they want to interrupt. My job is to shut other white people down when they want to say, oh no, I'm not prejudiced. I'm a Democrat. I'm accepting. My job is to make sure that they get, that they have privilege. And until we shut our mouths, and we listen to those people who don't, and we lift our people up so that we all have equity in this country, so that we are all fighting alongside each other, so that we are all on the same page, and we clearly get where we're going, we're not going to break through this. This is not just rhetoric. This is life or death. This moment in our country, the Democratic Party has the opportunity to do something different. We have the opportunity to really confront the fact that we have not been in alignment with our values. We've been talking a lot of smack.
So, the pathway forward for the Democratic Party is to tell white folks to sit down and shut up. Well, Bishop Harry Jackson of Hope Christian Church in Beltsville, Maryland, joins us to give us his take on that. Bishop Jackson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to be with you, and what a week this has been, huh?
It has been quite a week, but it looks like the Democratic Party, liberals are coming unhinged in the fact that I think they were so shocked and surprised by the loss in the election, they just don't know how to handle it.
Absolutely. They're still looking for the reason why, and I believe they're espousing their values and creating, attempting to create momentum through demonization of their political opponents and creating more schism, separating us on the basis of race, on the basis of gender. And other than that, that's the only thing they can really think to do now, is to let's demonize Mr. Trump, paint him as he is a part of some racist movement that's going to wipe people out, is going to do away with the little guy economically, etc. So it's an interesting time. I'm sure these tactics, Tony, won't work.
Well, I would think it would backfire. Although I'm happy for them to continue, because I think it actually helps conservatives out. But the two groups where they lost such standing in this election was number one, those that identify as evangelicals. Believe it or not, there were evangelicals that voted for Barack Obama. 81% of them this time around voted for Donald Trump, a record number. But also in the white males in larger numbers turned out and voted for Donald Trump, in large part, I think, because of this type of rhetoric that has become at the core of the Democratic Party's message.
That's exactly right. I think that when I hear this, as an African-American male, I think it's patronizing. I think about how can somebody who is from Idaho, where they've got three black people at the post office, I'm just joking, but there's a very small percentage of African Americans, but the identity of the party is wrapped up on selling false dreams to minorities and to the least of these in the culture. So I think that's a problem. And I saw a picture that was sent to me by one of my parishioners that showed Donald Trump with his parents, and his parents were holding up what ostensibly were KKK outfits or robes. And I reached back to this person and said, do not pass that on. Can't you see that picture is photoshopped? So all during the election, the claim of racism, claim of misogyny or prejudice against women, and the claim that you're going to bring your billionaire friends in and squash the little guy, that's about as sophisticated as the Democrats were able to get this time around in this election.
Well, and I guess we will see. We will see how the average American fares under the policies of Donald Trump, and I would venture to say that all Americans, regardless of their ethnic background or their economic class, will be better off after the policies of Donald Trump have taken grip. Bishop Harry Jackson, as always, great to have you on the program. Sorry we're out of time, up against a break, but we'll visit again real soon.
Love to do it, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right, Bishop Harry Jackson, full disclosure, Harry and I actually worked on a book together a number of years ago, published at Personal Faith Public Policy. He is a registered Democrat, African American. I am white and a registered Republican. And we talked about how you can arrive at consensus through biblical truths and principles. And anyway, it's very interesting. We developed a great friendship during that process. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to the phone lines to hear from you on this Tuesday. Don't go away.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
First Love, the latest album release from Dennis Jernigan, features some of his earliest songs, as well as some new ones. It's a musical return to Dennis Jernigan's first love, Jesus.
You are my first love.
Psalm 32:7 says that he is our hiding place and he will surround us with songs of deliverance. I can't think of a better picture of a relationship than me singing to my God singing to me. And true intimacy is just as simple as this. Lord, here's my heart, into me see.
You are my strength when I am weak. You are the treasure that I seek. You are my all in all.
I stand amazed in all of your glory.
First Love by Dennis Jernigan. Available now for a suggested donation of $12.99 at afastore.net.
I stand.
It's Tuesday afternoon, and this is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, and we are so glad that you are listening. 866-372-7234. I got another clip I want to play. This is from The Weeknd, the so-called Women's March. Okay, this is it's just a few, not le- it's less than a minute, but it's this is a clip from Gloria Steinem, Michael Moore. Yeah, he was here for the Women's March. Ashley Judge and Judd and Madonna. So listen to this.
Trump and his handlers have found a fox for every chicken coop in Washington, and a Twitter finger must not become a trigger finger.
So I woke up this morning, picked up the Washington Post, and the headline read, Trump takes power. I don't think so.
I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance.
Welcome to the revolution of love, to the rebellion, to our refusal as women to accept this new age of tyranny.
You know, what's amazing to me is how the just watch this, okay? Watch this. Pay attention to this now that I'm bringing this to your attention. Notice how the left will attribute things to conservatives. They'll say such and such said this or such and such is a racist. I mean, with few exceptions, I mean, there are times when they might have a, you know, we've seen some of those incidents like the videotape with Donald Trump. But the vast majority, what you will see is that they say that such and such said this. But yet with liberals, like we just heard, and like we heard from the candidates from the Democratic, vying for the Democratic Party head post, I mean, these things are coming out of their own lips. I mean, talk about divisive, talk about hatred. I mean, it's amazing to me. It's just stunning. And of course, they've had the media cover them for such a long time, provide cover for them, and they're able to say whatever they want to say, and they basically get away with it. I mean, did you hear any of those clips on the media? I mean, I do know that I think it was CNN a couple times had to break away and apologize for covering Madonna when she kept dropping the F word. I mean, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Michigan where Wayne is on the line. Wayne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. How are you today, Wayne?
I'm well. And yourself?
I'm good. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, about that Women's March, as I watch that, I'm a Christian and believe, you know, very much in be ye holy. But I also understand, and I don't defend the Women's March at all, I understand that there's a lot of deception for a lot of women, and therefore they can, you know, make the claim that, you know, they want to have abortion because it's my body and the various claims that they make. But the truth is that there's a great deception in that and a great harm that it not only does to those individual women, but it does brings that into our country, much like the Old Testament talks about curses, in the sense of how it changes the thinking. And then when people start to try to adapt over to that thinking, it doesn't lead to life. It leads to sorrows and unhappinesses. And so that's a hard thing to try to deal with face to face with a gal who's having some of those, you know, that who believes in that in that way. But that's where we, with the gospel, you know, we wish that it could go out and blanket everybody, but yeah. Many times it has to be spoken in a way to reach folks like that. Now, it is spoken, and it's not like people aren't trying to speak to those situations, but sometimes people are just going to reject. And
true.
So we as a nation, we need to, you know, we need, if we're going to have, if we're going to allow demonstrations and things like that, we need to at least have our laws in such a way that, you know, they don't get violent, they don't get out of hand. You know, when laws are starting to be broken, we stop that. Plus, it doesn't promote this anti. You know, it's like the Black Lives Matter and.
You brought up several important points, Wayne. Let me take a couple of them. First off, I'm not aware of, I mean, any major laws that were broken. I mean, I agree 100% with you that that's one thing that makes our country unique is that you have the ability to protest, to speak out. And I think, you know, the redress of grievances, and I think you should have the right to do that. Now, Friday was different in that they were rioting. They were breaking the law. They were destroying personal property. That's a completely different thing. Monday, they were just a little disorderly. And I mean, Saturday, walking in the streets, blocking, even when they weren't supposed to. But that's minor. But I want the bigger point that you brought up, Wayne, which I think is people need to understand, and most people, I hope, listening to this program do. But when we work to shape public policy, for instance, we were just talking about this issue earlier with no taxpayer funding of abortion. When we adopt laws basically are they're a kind of guidepost. The laws essentially set the standard, at least the lowest common denominator of what is acceptable behavior. And that's what we say we'll tolerate. And so when, as you were pointing out, when someone says, well, that's a personal decision, it's just between me and my doctor and my baby, and I can abort my own baby. Well, it's not just between that woman and her baby. It does affect society. And, you know, oftentimes when we read these things, you made reference to the Old Testament about how when they violate the law, it would bring, you know, problems upon the nation of Israel. Well, part of that is just natural consequences, and we've seen it in our own country. I mean, look at places like Chicago, where, I mean, it's probably one of, it is the most dangerous city in America. We have devalued human life. When we say a mother can choose to abort her baby, we are making a statement collectively as a society that life is not sacred. So that line becomes blurred. And so people then arbitrarily move the line. I mean, we've got professors that have advocated that you should be able to kill a baby up until they're a year old at Ivy League colleges, universities. So once you depart from the biblical perspective, the natural law perspective, then, you know, there's really no stopping it. It's the same thing we discussed about marriage. Once you redefine marriage from, that has its definition from creation, from the beginning of creation, natural law, Bible, Jesus, you know, whatever you say, it's been the same, a man and a woman. But when you change that, there's no stopping the redefinitions continuing to go on and on. And all of society pays the price for that. Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate you listening and calling in. Let's go to Indiana, where Melissa is on the line. Melissa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a few things to say about this woman march. First of all, there's a classy way to do a protest, and then there's a trashy way to do a protest. And I think that the way that they went about themselves was over the top with very, very little class. Well, there was no class. They picked wrong spokespersons to lead the Madonna. She has no class. And the costumes that they were wearing throughout the march makes me embarrassed to be a woman. I've worked in factories all my life. I've never been paid less than a man. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, but years in a factory, I've worked side by side next to men, and I've never been treated any less. I just think that if you want to do a protest to stand up for your rights, you need to do it in a classy manner, and in a manner that's going to get your point across. They may have had some valid points, but it got lost in the shuffle through all the filth and the trash and the disgusting behavior that they displayed. And I'm embarrassed. I'm appalled at the pictures that I see on Facebook, the signs that they hold. I don't know what to say. I'm just embarrassed to be a woman.
Well, it was shocking, and I was here. I wasn't marching, but I was here in D.C. and I saw. I mean, they had. You're referring to these the costumes. They had these hats on that looked like cat ears. You can Google it and find out what it was for yourselves. I'm not going to talk about it here. But they even had them on their kids. And you had teenage girls and you had – I mean, it was just – and the signs. Yes, I saw a number of the signs. And to me, you know, and I know it was a – they were playing off of the videotape of Donald Trump, which I was very clear and forthright about. I thought was – disgusting, reprehensible, unacceptable under any circumstance, even for locker room talk, okay? I've been very clear about that. But to wrap yourself in that type of comments and then, you know, basically that's what the whole protest was wrapped in is degrading to women, in my view. And you're absolutely right. If you listened... And again, the media doesn't want you to see how they kind of take that Hollywood version where they just kind of gloss over everything. They make it look like it's something that it's not. But if you listen to what was said and the language that was used, it was absolutely disgusting. You're right. Melissa, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Missouri, where Tim is on the line. Tim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a quick comment that they don't realize that a lot of these guys, the women, are going to jail for the violence and the destruction of private property. But it's actually going to help the economy because they're going to have to build more prisons just to house them all.
Well, I guess that's certainly from Friday. I don't know of any arrest on Saturday. There may have been some. I know they trashed the streets and some of the other things. But they, I don't know if they made any arrest on Saturday. Look, I am all for people publicly, you know, protesting. I mean, that's what makes our country work. But I think it needs to be in a tasteful and civil way on both sides, But I can tell you, in being involved in politics for probably, almost 25 years, I have never, ever been to a conservative protest, rally, whatever you want to call it, however you want to describe it, where the type of language that was used on Saturday by women was used in an event that I attended. Never. Ever. It's disturbing when there is this coarsening of our moral values and what is acceptable to be said in public. And you say, oh, you just don't live in the real world. Look, folks, I've been into about every profession you can be in. I've heard it all. I know what is said. Like I was in the Marine Corps. I was a police officer. I've been in politics and elected office. I've heard it all. But at least for most of my adult life, there's been a barrier between what is said in private that some people say. I don't engage in that kind of conversation. But there's always been at least a veil where that stuff has not been spoken in acceptable. It's not been accepted in public. But to speak this, basically on the Mall of Washington, D.C., for the whole world to hear, does show how we've had this, again, a coarsening of our values, of our morals. And I think it was expedited, accelerated, the decline by the previous administration. All right, folks, sorry we didn't get to the rest of the calls. We're out of time. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. In the meantime, check out the website, tonyperkins.com. And if you're not following me already on Twitter, you can do so at tperkins. I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. You can find him in Ephesians 6, where he says, if you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, well, by all means, you should keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.